It's Monday, December 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, questions remain about Russia's alleged involvement in the U.S. presidential election.
We have mobilized all capacity in order to address this issue.
European Union tries to tighten its security. Turkey vows revenge for deadly twin blasts. Also ahead, music's top awards are soon. We'll hear a prediction. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump says the Central Intelligence Agency conclusion that Russia interfered in last month's presidential election to boost his chances of winning was ridiculous, calling it just another excuse by Democrats for his upset of former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. U.S. intelligence agencies have concluded that Russia interfered in the final stretch of the presidential campaign to help the Trump campaign win the presidency and not simply meddle in the U.S. electoral process as previously believed. On Friday, White House spokesman Eric Schultz announced the broad review of the election season cyber attacks, including the email hacks, which rattled the presidential campaign and raised fresh concerns about Russia's meddling in U.S. elections.
The president earlier this week instructed the intelligence community to conduct a full review of the pattern of malicious cyber activity related to our presidential election cycle. So he's requested this report be completed and submitted to him before the end of his term. As you all know, in 2008, there were intrusions into both the Obama and McCain campaigns. There haven't been any noted episodes in 2012, but the president asked to go back with what we know now to make sure that we're using every tool possible as a means of due diligence. And then, of course, in 2016, our intelligence community determined that there was malicious cyber activity intended to interfere with our elections. In the high confidence assessment that was released this past October, the intelligence community made very clear that this was activity directed by the highest levels of the Russian government.
President-elect Trump told Fox News he does not oppose President Barack Obama's order to review cyber attacks during the lengthy presidential campaign, but said, quote, "You should not just say Russia." VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins us in the studio now as lawmakers on Capitol Hill are seeking some answers based on evidence that our national security agencies say they have.
Jim, we don't know exactly what this evidence is because none of it has been published. But according to the White House, there are numerous U.S. intelligence agencies that are convinced that, in fact, Russia did play a role, that Russia was collecting evidence across the political spectrum from Democrats and Republicans, hacking into information and systems, but chose only to publicize or to release that information, which was most damning to the Democrats. So in essence, Russia was trying to put its hand on the scale. This is not pleasing to President-elect Donald Trump in any way.
Donald Trump has had some business dealings with Russia. A lot of his picks have had some sort of connection with Russia. And so this whole notion that Russia perhaps had a hand in tipping the scales his way certainly wouldn't sit well.
Well, in fact, the man rumored to be his choice for Secretary of State, this is not absolutely confirmed, but I think the writing is on the wall, is the head of ExxonMobil, one of the biggest corporations in the world, and I believe the biggest U.S. energy company. This is a man who has gone to Russia, who has been face-to-face with Vladimir Putin, and apparently has had some business dealings with Russia. Look, there is no one who is suggesting that anything that might have come out of Moscow, whether it was directed by the Kremlin or whether there were some other rogue elements in Russia, that nothing coming out of Russia actually changed the outcome of the election. However, this adds to an undercurrent. We are up now to almost a lead in the popular vote of by Hillary Clinton of almost 3 million ballots. That's pretty substantial. Mm-hmm. If there is some real evidence of a smoking gun, it just adds to what I would say is this undercurrent that is bubbling under Donald Trump and that will continue to bubble under Donald Trump as he's trying to set up his new administration. But no one is suggesting that he did not get the votes that he actually did get in those critical states which gave him the Electoral College victory.
Right. And of course, as we know, it goes by the Electoral College votes, which is representative of each individual state, not the overall popular vote. Although that's a whole nother story for a whole nother day, as a lot of people are talking about this as well, and perhaps some changes down the road. But with regards to Russia, a serious allegation, if you will, because obviously we don't want any outside influences tampering. And I understand a couple of senators have called for an investigation.
This is not a partisan issue on Capitol Hill. There are those Republican lawmakers who fear that Democrats will try to make political hay out of this. But there are Republicans that I spoke with last week, Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican of South Carolina. He is very much in favor of a full airing of everything that we can find out.
In the long run, this exercise could prove good for our democracy and our voting process, as all these elements are being reviewed as to, you know, how good is our technology, how secure are the votes and the whole process as we try to maintain an above board process that we would like to think is the best in the world.
You know, alas, Jim, you and I are both old enough to remember when email first came into being.
Yeah, now you've dated us.
I could not have imagined at the dawn of that era that we would reach a point where literally no one's electronic communications are absolutely secure and safe, where nothing, where there is no 100% certainty with anything. I think that campaigns going forward are going to be operating under the assumption that any form of communication short of something verbal or written is subject to being aired, to appearing on WikiLeaks, to being shown to the public. And I suspect that that is really going to change the dynamic of how campaigns operate and how people get elected in this country.
Well, there's nothing better than having human assets on the ground. Michael Bowman is our human asset in the Senate as he follows Capitol Hill each and every week for us. Michael, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
Well, it's time now for us to check out what's buzzing on the web. And, of course, this may be one of the big topics. International Edition social media reporter G. Abby Lee joins me here in the studio. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, what Michael and I talked about, the possibility of Moscow's involvement in the U.S. presidential election, mm-hmm. I'm sure that's trending today.
Oh, absolutely. Especially after Senator John McCain tweeted a link to a joint statement on the U.S. Senate Committee on Armed Services website. He captioned it, hashtag cybersecurity can't be partisan. The stakes are too high. We'll work across aisle to investigate and stop cyber attacks. He is leading the bipartisan push for an investigation along with Senators Lindsey Graham, Charles Schumer, and Jack Reed. Graham, for his part, tweeted, I am not challenging the outcome of the election, but very concerned about Russian interference and actions at home and throughout the world. And as you know, President-elect Donald Trump and other top Republicans have brushed off the reports of Russia's involvement.
Mm-hmm. So what's the reaction like from Twitter users?
It looks like even Republicans are touting this move. Anna Navarro, a pundit, tweeted, thank God for John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and other Republicans not willing to roll over and play dead regarding things that need to be scrutinized. Separately, Eric Baylert, a writer at Media Matters for America, asked, Trump can't find a single senior intelligence official to step forward and say Russia is absolutely not involved in election?
Okay. Well, we're going to continue to hear more about this, I'm mm-hmm. sure. Changing the gear a little bit, what's trending on the entertainment side?
You know, it's what some people call the most wonderful time of the year. And that means people are discussing their favorite Christmas movies. And here are some of the favorites on Twitter. While You're Sleeping, Love Actually, Elf, Home Alone, that whole series, mm-hmm. A Christmas Story, Miracle on 34th Street. And there are also spirited discussions on whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, right.
Back to you, Jim.
Thank you so much. It may be a Christmas movie in the sense that a lot of people give it as a gift. Mm. Let's put it that way. You know, actually, being the 12th of December, that means we've got 12 days until Christmas.
I know.
Yes.
Exciting.
And so, yes, the 12 days of Christmas are upon us. Well, thank you so much, G. You can follow our program's account on our Twitter feed at @VOA_IE. I'm out there at VOA Stevenson. G is at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, Indonesia police arrest woman in bomb plot, points to new militant tactic. China condemns U.S. defense bill provision on Taiwan. Filmmaker flees Afghanistan and is still seeking to be heard. South Koreans celebrate president's impeachment. Meanwhile, farmers hope NLD can end suffering of junta-era land grabs. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more at the voanews.com website. And if you're on the go, take it with you. If you have a smartphone, try our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. A Kurdish militant group has claimed responsibility for the bombings that killed at least 38 people and wounded more than 150 others in the Turkish city of Istanbul. The claim was made Sunday by the Kurdistan Freedom Falcons, or TAK. That's a group seen as an offshoot of the outlawed PKK. Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul. He joins us with the latest.
Istanbul has been starting the process of burying those killed on Saturday night's twin suicide bombing. Most of those people who were killed were police officers. The first funerals of those officers were carried out on Sunday. A funeral drew the attendance of the president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the prime minister, Binali Yildirim, and also senior ministers. At one of the funerals, the Minister of Interior, Süleyman Soylu, promised revenge against those who carried out these attacks. The Deputy Prime Minister, Numan Kurtulmuş, had pointed fingers, blaming the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK. Later on Sunday, a splinter group of the PKK, known as TAK, the Kurdistan Freedom Falcons, claimed responsibility for the twin suicide bombings on their webpage. This group is known to have links to the PKK. The government considered both groups to be one in the same. Now, the PKK says it has nothing to do with this organization, but this organization goes back to 2004 and is an organization that has carried out some of the most extreme attacks in Turkey, and earlier this year targeted Turkish security forces in the capital Ankara in a very similar attack to Saturday, using suicide car bombings, attacking a military bus carrying soldiers, and a police station which in the center of Ankara, which killed dozens, of which many of those who died were civilians.
The blasts occurred near a brand-new football stadium, fortunately a few hours after a game had taken place there.
Well, that's right, and it does appear that the attackers weren't seeking to target civilians. They were waiting to target the police, riot police that were protecting the football stadium. The attack occurred something in the region of about an hour and a half after the game had finished, so most spectators had left. And in fact, most of the people that were killed were security force members. This is leading to immediately suspicion falling on the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK, or splinter organizations linked to them. And they have targeted security forces in a series of very similar suicide bombings over the last 18 months since the collapse in peace talks and the peace process between the government and the PKK, which failed last year.
Certainly far from the first attack carried out by the PKK, and President Erdogan, as you mentioned, vowing to revenge this act. What can we expect moving forward to be some of the actions taken?
Well, that is a question everybody is asking now. Turkey is already under emergency rule following a failed coup attempt in July. In fact, in the lead up to this latest suicide bombing, security had been markedly increased in Istanbul. There were heavy anti-terror police presence in many public places. Quite what now that the further security measures that can be further ratcheted up, no one quite knows. Possibly there could be a further crackdown on the legal Kurdish movement.
And it somewhat complicates the international reaction to this because on the one hand, of course, countries are going to condemn the attacks and on the other hand, very fearful of what the crackdowns may bring.
Well, this is it. And in fact, the government and president has been very critical of of its allies, in particular its allies, for failing to do enough to support what it says is these threats of terrorism that it is facing. It's not only calling for cooperation from its allies in facing down Islamic State and the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK, but also what it calls terrorists who are involved in the attempted coup plot. It feels it's not getting enough cooperation there, and this will feed in undoubtedly after these latest attacks. The government and the president will be looking for more cooperation from its allies, and if that fails to come, then this could lead to further divisions between Turkey and its allies, and we'll just feed into the feeling that Turkey is further isolated.
Dorian Jones in Istanbul, thank you so much for that latest update.
You're welcome.
European Union ministers have agreed to tighten external border checks as a new report warns European jihadists returning from the Middle East are now presenting new dangers at home. For VOA, Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
New European Union findings reportedly estimate that up to 2,500 European fighters are still in Iraq and Syria. Hundreds have already returned to Europe, and with the Islamic State weakened in the Middle East, experts believe many more will follow. They also worry that tactics like car bombs, commonly used by IS overseas, could be imported to Europe. French authorities recently foiled a car bomb plot in Paris. European Home Affairs Commissioner Dimitris Avramopoulos says intelligence suggests that no new foreign fighters have entered Europe in recent months. But he told reporters that systematic border checks, including on EU residents, were among a range of counterterror measures the bloc is acting on.
We have mobilized all capacity in order to address this issue. Yesterday we had the second internet forum. Internet providers are engaged. We have an excellent cooperation based on mutual trust, and they have already started removing illicit and terrorist material from all platforms.
France, Belgium, and Germany have all been hit by terror attacks this year, and EU members fear more will come. Britain's spy chief warned Thursday IS is plotting more violence against the UK and its allies.
Et puis, j'ai souhaité sur la question du chiffrement, dire qu'il fallait aller vite.
French Interior Minister Bruno Le Roux also renewed calls for new communication software, allowing European intelligence services to monitor encrypted messages sent by the terrorists. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Much more on this story, the others you've heard on our program, and many more, conveniently broken down by topic and region, on our website at voanews.com. Be sure to follow us as well on Twitter at @VOA_IE. And while you're online, check out our Facebook page. VOA Now is where you want to go. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Do you lead a busy life, not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, it's almost time for the music industry to honor its own with the Grammy Awards. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald stops by to share his pick for Best New Artist.
One of the most interesting categories for me as a longtime Grammy watcher is Best New Artist. Now, sometimes the Grammy voters get it spectacularly right. I mean, the Beatles got it. Mariah Carey got it. Adele got it. Sometimes they don't get it right. I remember A Taste of Honey got it back in the 70s. Macklemore got it. Not to say that Macklemore's bad, right. But yeah. And then, of course, who can forget the Milli Vanilli debacle of 1990, where they were stripped of their Best New Artist Grammy because it turns out they didn't sing a note on their album. Anyway, the latest nominees for Best New Artist are country singer Kelsey Ballerini, the Chainsmokers, who are an electronic DJ duo, Chance the Rapper, singer-songwriter Maren Morris, and hip-hop singer-songwriter Anderson .Paak. My Grammy prediction talents are minimal. I have screwed it up many, many times on Grammy predictions, but I am going to say the Chainsmokers will get it, just because their visibility has been high this year, and they had the year's longest-running number one pop hit with Closer featuring Halsey, so their visibility is very high. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Chainsmokers get Best New Artist. I guess we'll find out on February 12th.
We give the Grammy for Best Countdown Award to our own Top 20 Countdown presenter. That's Ray McDonald. You'll find him each and every week on VOA 1.
And you can also find me on Twitter at Ray on the Hits. And don't forget, the entire music crew hangs out on Facebook at VOA 1 The Hits.
Oh, a great place to go. Thank you so much, Ray.
All right, Jim.
Okay, we don't endorse smoking of any kind, but musically speaking, the Chainsmokers? Okay, we'll hold Ray to that once the Grammys come out. We'll have more Grammy news on the way tomorrow's program. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Cornelius Tenner. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
John Glenn, the first American astronaut to orbit the Earth, once said that to sit back and let fate play its hand out and never influence it is not the way man was meant to operate. John Glenn, who died on December 8th at the age of 95, lived by these words throughout his life. John Glenn learned how to fly while attending college in 1939. During the day, he studied chemistry, and in his spare time, he took flying lessons. Shortly after the 1941 attack on Pearl Harbor, he left college to join the Marines, flying fighter planes in the Pacific Theater during the Second World War and later in the Korean conflict. In 1959, the newly formed National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA, put out a call for test pilots. Of the 508 candidates, 7 men, including John Glenn, were chosen for astronaut training. These were the Mercury 7, America's space pioneers. John Glenn did not get his wish of becoming the first man in space, but he did become the first American in deep space, orbiting the Earth 3 times on February 20, 1962. At the time, few members of the public realized the dangers involved in spaceflight. The risks were incredibly high, said then NASA flight director Gene Kranz. And you know, when we put John Glenn on board a rocket, he was flying the 6th Atlas, and 2 of the previous 5 had blown up. Discouraged by lack of flight assignments in the Apollo Moonshot program that followed Mercury, John Glenn left NASA in 1964. For the next decade, he worked in the private sector. Eventually, he ran for the U.S. Senate and, after 2 failed attempts, won a seat in 1974. He would represent Ohio for 24 years. And just before he ended his political career, at the age of 77, he became the oldest person to fly in space as a crew member of the Discovery Space Shuttle. John spent his life breaking barriers, from defending our freedom as a decorated Marine Corps fighter pilot in World War II in Korea, to setting a transcontinental speed record, to becoming, at age 77, the oldest human to touch the stars, said President Barack Obama. The last of America's first astronauts has left us. But propelled by their example, we know that our future here on Earth compels us to keep reaching for the heavens.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.